That's the world famous Keith Klein.
Hey there.
Welcome to the winter solstice. Not right. Yet, but we're getting close.
A few hours.
11:30 this morning, we officially welcome winter in the shortest day of the year. At 8:35, we officially welcome the deputy mayor of the city of Bloomington. It's our good friend, Mick Renheisen. Mick, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm doing well, thanks.
It's good to hear your voice because that means I've pushed the right button, and that's about the third time in 90 minutes I've done that. So encouraging to hear from you. Big holiday plans. We know the city's going to be closed on the 25th and the 1st. That's not surprising at all, but how about you?
Well, I'm looking forward to spending time with family, as I suspect most everybody on listening to the radio today is as well. It's that time of year where, you know, we get to spend more time with family, hopefully, and I've got my daughter's coming in town from various parts of the state and outside of the state, so
exciting.
Nieces and nephews and, you know, family. That's what holidays are about, and I'm looking forward to spending some time with mine, as I'm sure everybody else is.
That's exactly right. Let's get us all together and celebrate, and a couple days later be annoyed at why there's so many people around. That's what me, because if it didn't happen that way, we would all be worried about what's going on. And speaking of what's going on, trash, we want everybody to be aware of. If you have trash on Monday the 25th, just move it back a day to the 26th, and you'll do all that stuff. And we'll talk about Christmas trees and wreaths next year. We're not going to talk about that. I'll talk about that today. But we had a busy time at the meeting last night, Keith.
And Mick, you had some action of the city council on the amendment that will allow an interim, what do you call it, code?
Well, it is code. It's called the Unified Development Ordinance, and in this particular instance, it's pertaining to the downtown and the downtown overlay district area of our community. So we're obviously not amending everything in the Unified Development Ordinance. That's a lengthy process that will get started as soon as the City Council passes the comprehensive master plan. Following that, there'll be a consultant that will work on modifications that reflect what the adopted master plan suggests our community should look like, the built environment in our community. And then each of those codes, as you stated, Keith, will be modified and then proposed to the Plan Commission first and then back to the City Council. And about 13 or 14 months from now, we should have a new adopted Unified Development Ordinance. So hence the reason why the interim UDO amendment came up last night, because it's taking a long time to get to the other side of the UDO. We feel like there's a lot of development pressure downtown. We've heard a lot of resident concerns over the last 2 years we've been in office, and Mayor Hamilton will tell you we heard this a lot on the campaign trail. People are very concerned about overdevelopment of downtown and too much of one type of housing over another, and height and density, and all of those things are part of what the Unified Development Ordinance regulates.
Now, Mick, what defines downtown? Where are our parameters that people are concerned about? This is just not right. This is just down Kirkwood? Is that all we're talking about?
Well, I wish I could give you the exact boundaries, but I'm going to do my best to sort of suggest what I think it is, and then you can give us
an approximate. We're not writing this
yeah,
down.
Yeah, the parameters would generally be, you know, go out to 17th Street, Miller Sowers Park, and that part of town inward, and then go south to probably not much past the First Street area.
Yeah.
Really the core downtown, and then east and west Indiana Avenue, because everything east of that is university property, and west, you know, go over Rogers Street. So roughly that area, and I may be off a block or two.
Exactly, but what we want to do is we want to give people a general area of what is being discussed in all of this.
Not just the Courthouse Square, a little broader than that, but not, you know, not a ridiculously large amount of property either.
Nick, Mick, address the elephant in the room, because the way the article is in the paper today, it sounds like, well, okay, we've got an ordinance, but if you give us a little money for this, that, or the other thing, we can change whatever the ordinance says.
Why is that perception there that there's buying and selling going on? Where did that come from, and why is that a prevalent thought?
Well, that's a great question to ask when I'm not sure I understand the answer to myself, but let me start by saying zoning regulations and code have always had waivers or variances that allow for a good development project to somehow not meet code exactly, whether that's height, density, building material, or something else. So that's what the Plan Commission is for. It's like it's a body that looks at those things after the staff makes a recommendation based on the code. So look at the code as the rule book for sports, and it's the rule book for building in Bloomington. And if in the case of sports, there's not much, you know, there's a little gray area, but not much. You can't violate certain things. It's an absolute. Well, the code is supposed to be guideline-driven, and if you do all the things in the code, you should be able to build your project. That's called by right. So when you want to vary from that, which most developers do, the price of land has gone up considerably downtown, for example, it's difficult to make your project work from a financial perspective if you don't get more density, height, or change building materials, or whatever. So the city's just saying, all right, if you're going to do those things outside of what the code says, then we need something that's for the public good to grant your waiver. And I would use the term public good, not all this other stuff that's flying around out there. It's been part of zoning for as long as I can remember. I'll go back to my days in parks in the 70s and 80s, and I wasn't involved in the Parks Department until the 80s, but members of the Parks Board will tell you they ask for the Plan Commission to exchange green space when developers came and built subdivisions. That's for the public good. You don't want to see all your green space gone, and we have no place for kids to play and no place for the environment. And so, you know, we protected green space by exchanging that for developments that came in and said, if you want to build this, you've got to put X amount of green space in your project or dedicate X amount of green space somewhere else or pay for X amount of green space somewhere else. So the notion that this is new is kind of, I don't think, very accurate. What's new is we're not talking about green space as much anymore because the community, through its regulatory body, Plan Commission, City Council, administrations in the past, have done a good job of protecting that. Now it's what? We don't want too much student housing. We don't want a bunch of buildings that look the same downtown. We don't want things that are too high and challenge the historic character of our beautiful downtown. And we think there's an affordable housing challenge in our community. It's not going to get better if we don't try to help incentivize that kind of development. So that's what the three things are that we're talking about now. Sustainable development, I hope no one objects to that. That just means do the best you can to build a sustainable project. Do something that is in character with our community's design guidelines. So, you know, we want some diversity of housing product, what it looks like, but we don't want it to be ridiculous and stand out like a sore thumb. And if all possible, let's try to develop some affordable housing when you ask for a waiver from existing guidelines. And if you don't want to do affordable housing, it doesn't fit into your mix, then will you contribute to a fund that allows us to go do it somewhere else?
Why do people assume that is the breaking point of the deal, that if you don't do that, the variances won't happen?
Well, I can't speak to that because I don't think those things have necessarily been played out to be true. There's been several by-right projects in the last year that have happened. You know, the city, the plan department, has asked for those things that we've been talking about that are coming through the comprehensive master plan, and for the most part, developers are willing to do what they can, and when they can't, they either choose to do a by-right project, which means they can do exactly what the code says, or they offer to do something that meets one of the city's public good tests to get their variance. So I can't explain the reaction other than it's change, and I get the change is difficult for everybody. And we're all working through that transition period, and I think that's what a lot of the pushback is for the moment, is it's we're in this transition. And everybody would like to have a predictable process, us included. We would. We'd like to say, if you do this, then you can build that.
I know you don't have perhaps the answer to this, but I'm just trying to figure out how this all got started, that you had to trade one for the other or one's exclusive with the other. You can't build unless you contribute to this fund. It's extortion. It's not extortion. That's a silly word. But these things can happen to some level, but is it mandatory? Is that the deal? Or does the commission decide what's mandatory? Or does the law decide what's mandatory for these variances?
Sure. So there's always multiple steps in this process. It's not any different. You start with the planning department. You submit your project. It's reviewed by the code that we have, whatever that is. Now this interim code in this area that we were talking about. Then the staff makes a recommendation. Of course, the staff's going to ask for the things that we just talked about if you're not doing a by-right project, because those are the public good tests.
So it is a formula to a degree, and if you have to check the boxes, and if you want something different, then you get all right. I mean, I understand that. I think that the way you've explained it makes sense. I'm just trying to figure out why it got twisted. I mean, I know that's not your department to worry about, but it is interesting to see. So,
go ahead. You know, we've heard the arguments against. We respect that. We understand that. You know, we're lucky in Bloomington. We have a tremendous amount of development going on. There are many communities that would love to have that challenge. We consider it a challenge because we know that the cost of living here is high, and we're trying to find a reasonable balance to make it more affordable for people of all walks of life to be able to live in our community, not just one particular type. And I won't pick on just students. I mean any type, right?
Well, most downtown areas of any city is not for the faint of heart and the pocketbook. That's not. I don't think that I'm breaking any news there.
Right. So it may not be that everything could be downtown, but where we are asking is we don't want to have nothing but one type of population
right.
in any part of the community. We want a diverse, Bloomington is a diverse community in a lot of ways, and we want to make sure that there's housing options that reflect that diversity.
We've looked at Portland, we've looked at Boulder, we've looked at other places for guidance in other fields. Who have you looked to at this affordable housing? Is there any sister type city that you look at and say, well, that's a good project, we're trying to move in that direction? Where's your answer to this problem, I guess?
Yeah, those benchmarks are good ones that you just use, Glass, and others that you always look at your university peer communities because they typically face similar pressures that we would in Bloomington, so you don't have to reinvent the wheel. In fact, the notion of an interim UDO is how we got that. We looked at other communities, and quite frankly, some did a moratorium. They just said, yeah, we're just stopping development until we figure this out. Well, we didn't think that was good. There's too much robust and good development going on. We don't want to stop at all. In fact, we don't want to stop any of it. We just want to recalibrate moving forward what we want to see come out of some of the project proposals. Those three things, ideally, right? Check those three boxes, and we think those are appropriate things to ask for during the development process if you're not doing a buy-right project.
If you're not doing a buy-right project. So there you go. Yeah. That's I think that's an excellent explanation. Thank you for doing that for us this morning, because sometimes the noise gets lost in the noise. It's just noisy. And I agree with you. If people don't agree with it, that's fine. But I want people to understand it. That's the difference. So, thank you. Mick Renhuizen's our guest this morning. He's the deputy mayor of the city of Bloomington.
Mick, you got some deadlines you need to
bring let's get those out there. Good job.
Well, Bloomington Youth Basketball Season 3 is coming up January 5th. That's the biggest league of the three seasons, and we know a lot of people will wait till the last minute to register for things, so don't want you to miss the January 5th deadline. That's out at the Twin Lakes Recreation Center. $85 a player. We need some volunteer coaches as well. Reach out to the Parks Department. And they can help you both register, and if you're interested in coaching, we can help get you trained out there as well for the kids. We have a great kickoff to the bicentennial year that the city and county are both celebrating in 2018 on New Year's Eve.
Oh, baby, Bette Savage was here yesterday morning. I know all about it.
Talked to you about this already?
Oh, for the last 3 weeks. We're fired up, ready to go.
Awesome.
5 to 7:30.
City Hall, 5 to 7:30, bicentennial-themed food, music, activities for all ages.
And the best part?
Mayor Hamilton will toast. We'll do a toast at 7 p.m. Mocktails will be served.
Mock night and mocktails.
Mocktails
free.
It's for families.
And it's
right.
Great. So you can do
very
that.
Very family-themed.
And then
take a look
kids.
At our website, Bicentennial. Visit bloomington.com/bicentennial-2018 for all kind of things we're going to do all year long, city and county, to celebrate 200 years of a great community and a great county.
And there's tons of ways to get involved with that, too, as Bette has been mentioning to us. But we'll remind everybody of that next week. One piece of heavy lifting I want to do for you before 2017 gets out of the way. We saw, what was it, last Wednesday, the city and county are filing a joint lawsuit against opioid manufacturers and distributors. Obviously, the city is suing suing the governor over annexation. Now you're joining a lawsuit here as well. Tell the people who pays for that, how that's funded, and is this going to be in court for 5-10 years? What's the end game here? What is the purpose of all this?
Our city's joined thousands of cities around the country in this opioid lawsuit against manufacturers of opioids, and basically the argument is you are marketing these products to all kinds of people who are looking for relief from pain, mind you, but then that the outcome of that is an addiction that all of our communities are dealing with, and all the terrible things that it does to families and individuals and communities. It's you know.
Is this like a class action lawsuit?
It's actually not. It's I just asked my lawyer for the term, and I've lost it. But I asked the same question. It is not a class action lawsuit, but we are not paying anything to join the lawsuit. We've joined with a law firm in Indianapolis. Has joined with law firms around the country. It's one of those situations where if there's damages reclaimed, that those go to pay the lawyer fees. So we have no expense on our side except a little staff time to to join the lawsuit and provide data from our community that feeds upward to the lawyers that are litigating this for all the cities that are concerned about this opioid epidemic.
Gotcha.
So it's really about the marketing practices that we think are part of the challenge, part of the reason why people have addictions related to opioid use and the overuse of that as a treatment for pain management.
So joining this lawsuit is just to put additional pressure on the national movement of this. You're not looking for, quote-unquote, a result for Bloomington or Monroe County. This is just a vote of confidence.
So any proceeds besides paying for the offset of costs for the attorneys would be used for education and mitigation in communities. So we could see, as a result of joining the lawsuit, some funding for that to help, to help people get off the addictions, to help our community deal with the ramifications of the addiction problem.
Okay, good, because a lot of people, me included, are wondering, well, how do you pay for all this legal ease if you're using an Indianapolis law firm? And now you've explained that. But that's why we love talking to Mick Renhuizen's the deputy mayor. He joins us every Thursday morning to, again, get through the fog and find some answers. And again, it's completely appreciated. Do you have any Christmas trivia for
Solstice
us?
Trivia.
Solstice trivia.
Not really, but...
Well, we'll call
I've
it
I've got
that.
Neither. I got some just basic deadline and interesting things that Keith asked me this morning about what happens after Christmas when everybody puts out their extra boxes and packages and wrappers. And,
I like it.
Puts it in a bag next to their trash receptacle, their new city sanitation cart. And I said, well, it'll be there the day after that, too, because we can't pick up things that aren't in the canister now. The whole point of the automation system was to have
non-humans.
The arms on the trucks pick up the canisters, pick up the carts and dump those, and not our staff getting off the truck and having to pick it up anymore. So don't leave anything out other than what's in your carts, and if you do, you'll find it's still going to be there the next day. So I want to make a reminder of that to everybody. And speaking of leaves, we're not, but I am going to real quickly. We are just about ready to close the last day of leaf collection, and that's a trivia question for you. When is the last day for leaf collection? Is it tomorrow, December 22nd, this Saturday, Christmas Eve, or New Year's Day?
Tomorrow.
Yeah, you got to give them the weekend off, don't you?
Yep. It's December 22nd, so if you've got leaves out in the proper place, we'll be out about tomorrow will be the last day. And if we've missed you like we do sometimes, just give sanitation a call. They'll put you on the list to get you wrapped up before we turn from leafing to snow removal, hopefully not too soon, but that's what happens. Same crew works on snow removal after leaf collection's over. So how many bags, let's see, is it bags? How many cubic yards of leaves do you think we collected this leafing season?
Wow.
Is it A, 3,660 cubic yards, B, 4,280, C, 5,700, or D, 9,002?
I'm going to go for 9,000.
Cubic yards of leaves.
The answer is always C when you have no idea. C.
I know this one had to be completely random. It's 4,280 cubic yards of leaves collected in curbside leaf vacuuming this year.
That's a lot.
Leaf-related questions. City Utilities is reminding area residents to do something during this time of year, not only during the fall, but at all times. Is it A, burn as many leaves as possible?
No.
B, compost as many leaves as possible?
Perhaps.
C, clear leaves and other debris from storm inlets?
Yes.
Or D, clean your kitchen sink disposal?
I got to clean my kitchen sink disposal.
That's
exactly
right. But C is your answer.
C is your answer.
C is right. Because freeze and thaw
and
snow may be coming, if leaves block those inlets, it backs up on your roads, creates freezing slick spots. So we have crews that help get out and do that, but there's a lot of inlets. If you can take a look at the one in front of your home or your business and remove the debris and clear the leaves, you'll be happy too when we start to get back up and flow and it can't get down those inlets and causes other problems.
Quarter inch of rain expected on Friday, so that will test that theory.
There's
so get out
reminder.
There and do it. Ho, ho, ho. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, all that fun stuff. Have a great time with your family, Mick, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks to you and all the listeners.
Yeah.
Happy holidays to all of you. Spend time with your families. Enjoy each other. Look forward to talking after the holiday break with you guys again.
Happy holidays, Mick.
Mick Renheisen, he's the city of Bloomington's deputy mayor and answer provider.